This is the SF Signal Podcast. Welcome to Fantasy Island. Not to be confused with Survivor Island. I mean, can you imagine Mr. Rourke and Tattoo putting people through all those challenges and immunity crap just to stay around and get fed? I mean, come on. Hey, I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude, and I have perfected the awkward pause. Tonight, Hail Hydra, I have assembled some folks to talk about military science fiction again, but with a twist. I want to hear from people who read this stuff, the consumers, the aficionados of military science fiction. We've recently had two episodes where we talked to some people who like to write military sci-fi. Now I want to hear from the irregulars who like to read it. So let's go down the list here and say hello to some folks. There's some folks who haven't been on in a while, so I'm going to say hello first of all to AJ Sykes.
Hello, everybody. I'm Aaron Sykes. I write as AJ Sykes. I'm the author of Gods of Chicago. It's a noir urban fantasy released in February. Now available Kindle print editions as well. You can find me online at ajsykes.com. That's Sykes with an I, S-I-K-E-S. My Twitter is Sykes Aaron. And I also work as a freelance editor. So if there are any writers out there who want help getting their manuscripts together, please get in touch with me. I love working with independent authors and getting your stories where you want them to be.
Very cool. Next up, Miss Gail Carriger.
Hi, everybody. I'm Gail Carriger, and I mostly write comedy, steampunk, young adult, and adults. And you can find everything about me at gailcarriger.com. If you misspell it on the Googles, it'll probably still find me. I'm happy to be back.
Very cool. We're happy to have you back, Gail.
It's been too long.
It has been. Also, speaking of a really long time, let's say hello to Fred.
Hi, it's Fred Kitsch, and I am around SF Signal, just not that much with this podcast. I'm found
There's
on Twitter as at Fred Kitsch. My website is Bernal Alpha, and I am one of the Three Horsemen, and we released a new episode today covering both the science fiction of Charles Sheffield and Ancillary Justice by Ann Leakey.
Was that today or last Wednesday?
Last Wednesday.
Oh, that's right, the time shift thing.
Yes, there's a time
shift. I'm all timey-wimey, what can I say?
Yes, wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. So there's another podcast? That's awesome. When did you guys start that? Is this the first episode?
No, we're working with Karen Burnham and Karen Lord. Stepping in, you know, it's now SF Crossing the Gulf Horseman.
That would be awesome. We got to make that happen.
Be the Marvel crossover event of the summer.
Yes, and then right. And then in order to get the full episode, we'll also throw a little bit down Skippy and Fanti. So,
Agents of Sci-Fi. There you go.
Next up, let's say hello to Django.
Hi, I'm Django Wexler. I'm the author of the Shadow Campaign series, and which is a military fantasy. My most recent book, which is not now, but by the time this episode airs, will have been released in the recent past, is a middle grade fantasy called The Forbidden Library. I'm very excited about that. We're gearing up for release events and all that stuff. You can find me online at djangowexler.com. That's djangowexler.com, or Django Wexler on Twitter or on Facebook, or generally anywhere under that name.
So book launches are very, very exciting and stressful times, and I'm channeling Gail right now, who I'm pretty sure is thinking, if you have a book launch coming up, what the hell are you doing here? You should be freaking out.
No, I'm thinking it's brilliant for him to be here.
I thought the book launch is as of this recording next Tuesday, so when you're hearing this, it will be one day in the past, which is actually a pretty good time to be on a podcast, I thought.
Or the future. Yeah.
But for the actual launch, we're having a party, which it would be pointless to invite you to because it will have been in the past by the time this happens. This time travel is very confusing.
Yes, this airs on a Monday.
Oh, I thought it aired on Wednesday.
No, it airs on a Monday. Well,
in that case, the party is tomorrow at the University Bookstore in Seattle, and you should all come at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, April 15th.
You heard it here first. Django said everybody should come to Seattle. He's willing to fit the bill. So if you need a place to stay, he's got a couch.
I ordered cupcakes, and if no one comes, I will have to eat them all myself, and then they will have to roll me to the convention.
He's just ignoring me now, yeah.
I will help you with that.
Okay.
Very cool. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I guess I should also mention I will be at WonderCon later this month, the weekend of the 18th. So if you are there, come and say hi to me.
Very cool. And
where is that happening this year?
Because they in Anaheim.
Anaheim, that's right.
Yeah.
Ooh. Anaheim Convention Center?
I think so. I couldn't say for sure.
Oh, good luck with that.
Look it up on their website.
Yeah,
have any information.
I went there for BlizzCon, and I stayed at a hotel that was one block away. And it turns out one block in Anaheim is equal to 6 blocks anywhere else in the world. Joy. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Jeff Patterson, who has been on a lot recently.
I have been.
I think you've been getting burned out on the whole horseman thing, so...
Yeah, well, even I am getting sick of myself. I also want to say that though I've never misspelt Gail's name when looking her up, I have famously misspelt Fred's name. So,
even in print.
In print, yes.
Yeah, I've misspelled it and I've mispronounced it. So, yes. I've got you there.
He is the name that cannot be spoken. Hi, Jeff Patterson. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com, along with all my other weird writing and illustration and all that. I am on Twitter as Jeff at Jeff Patterson 11.
And you would think that we wouldn't get it so wrong. I mean, how difficult is it to say Fred? And if you got that particular reference from Jeff, I may have another one for you. Dun, 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 dun. Hey, that reminds me, Gail is coming to Colorado Springs, and I get to see her at the end of the month at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference.
Yes, yes, you do. Yes, I am.
Very exciting.
Now, you're teaching, so does that mean you are going to be wearing a, like, traditional Victorian-era teacher's outfit?
No, I'll be wearing my regular vintage look, but I'll probably put a teacherly spin on it. Now that you've mentioned it, I like to be inspired, so we'll go for the librarian look. But it's kind of, I don't know what the weather's going to be like, so I can't be too tweety. That'll be too hot.
I'm wondering if it's going to be warm.
Yeah, we'll see. But okay. Of course, I mean, I'm definitely dressing for the part. You doubt me?
No, not at all. Never.
Okay. Phew.
All right, tonight we're going to talk about military sci-fi from the point of view of the reader. So what I want to know is what makes up a good story for you? That's the first one. Let's start with Fred.
Okay. Well, for me, I'm not sure about the rest of the panel, but I'm actually a veteran. I was a tanker for 12 years.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, right, whatever. you don't know how many of us are annoyed when we hear that. Look, you paid me to blow things up.
Woo-hoo.
That's thanks enough.
let me ask you a serious question here, Fred.
Okay. Sure.
From the point of view of someone who actually was in a tank, that movie with James Garner from the 80s where he takes the tank and he's in the town. I mean, how realistic was that?
We feel that Kelly's Heroes was a much better depiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a podcast if I haven't made Jeff completely lose it.
That's true.
Anyway, continue, please.
Well, you've totally thrown me out of it, so. All right, so the question is, what makes a good story for me?
Yes.
Something that resonates with my own experience.
Okay.
I mean, there is, for example, nothing worse for me than... this isn't necessarily science fiction, but any story that involves a vast military conspiracy, having been in a vast military machine, I know that we just can't keep conspiracies going the way they show in your typical techno thriller.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, or a story where the rank structure is realistic. I mean, you just don't run a unit where the officers do everything.
And no.
You can't have a military where the enlisted people are stupid.
No.
You know, these are things that a lot of stories use, and it's just like, nope, it's not the way it works.
So Beetle Bailey, not one of your favorites.
Or Gomer Pyle.
Okay. For shame. No. So the movie with Dudley Moore and Eddie Murphy, where Dudley Moore is designing the tank and Eddie Murphy is actually in the tank. Did that ever, like, anything like that ever happen to you, or? Like the tank suddenly falling apart because the designer back in time was doing stuff to it.
I have no idea what you're talking about there, Patrick. I hate to say.
Was that too obscure a reference even for Jeff?
Yes, it was.
Really?
Yeah. I vaguely remember the film, but I'm not getting it.
Wow. Okay. So what about you, Aaron? What makes up a good story for you?
Well, also a veteran. I was an infantry scout and a sniper observer for 2 years.
Scouts out.
Scouts out. stay behind the tankers. ditto me on most of Fred's comments, actually all of them. It's got to resonate
probably with... probably also agrees with me in regards to the infantry. They make good punches.
Yeah. okay, that put me off my pins. Where was that? Right.
that seems to be our specialty
here. A good story. It's got to resonate with reality. So, yeah, you cannot have stupid enlistees. You cannot have, I'm going to call it out, aliens. The lieutenant and aliens. Wrong. even a greenhorn lieutenant is not going to do that. And that, in retrospect, kills the movie for me. When I was a kid watching it, I was like, oh, my God, aliens. But having been through the service, looking back at it, they dropped the ball on that. You've got to have characters that are believably service members. Without that, it's just Charlie Sheen playing Hot Shots and that ridiculous Navy SEALs movie and all this other bullshit. And can I say that? Sorry.
Yeah.
that just absolutely does not qualify for a military film.
You didn't like Charlie Sheen's Navy SEALs?
No, I didn't. Not at all. Because I was actually in the military when I saw it. doing the things purportedly that they were supposed to be doing and just like... No, it's completely false. This is absolute crap. This is Hollywood with steroids and alcohol and God knows what else running through their veins. Oh. It's ridiculous.
What about Chuck Norris and Delta Force?
Well, I'm going to protect myself and say no comment because I know Chuck Norris is probably hearing this because he has Chuck Norris's ears. So
he hears all.
Yeah. So,
do you remember the scene in the Bruce Lee film at the end where he battles Chuck Norris on the Coliseum?
Yeah.
And at that point, when Chuck Norris first walks out and when he takes off and he's got no shirt on, and you think to yourself, "Wow, we have interbred with Yeti."
Yeah, I remember that. And somehow he still manages to be the butt of all those Chuck Norris jokes.
Yes.
And we take it seriously. Well, I mean, we don't take it that seriously, really.
Gail, what about you? What makes up a good story for you?
I think for me, it's the same thing that's for most stories, which is I'm a character-driven reader, so I have to really identify with the characters. I have no military background, and so that aspect is completely like I can't tell whether it's realistic or not. I think I have a kind of a outsider's fascination, which is why I read military sci-fi, because I was raised as opposite from military as you can imagine. I was raised in this kind of
growing up
alternative,
yeah.
Pacifist, counterculture, hippie, commune sort of situation. My dad was in the Korean War, but he never talked about it. And, you know, was very anti-military, as some vets are. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the way I was raised. I was raised kind of with an abject fear of the police, for example, which it still takes me a long time to get over, and a sort of ingrained mistrust of authority. So I find the military culture itself very alien and therefore extremely intriguing because it's so outside of my worldview, which I think is why I'm drawn to the genre and which is why I would never write it. And I don't suffer from what you guys are talking about, which my friendship group refers to as Clark Kenting, which is when you are so familiar with something because you're an expert in it that it becomes really hard to forgive the fantastical nature of it because it's getting sort of these concrete facts of your world wrong. So, for example, I'm a scientist by training, and so I can't watch CSI because they use a lot of the same machinery that I would in the laboratory. And it's so expensive and illogical, and the tests they run are like – and so I find it impossible to watch. And so I can understand having that kind of attitude to military sci-fi when you're reading it. But fortunately for me, I don't suffer from that. So what I look for in military sci-fi is the innateness of the militariness that gives me that sense of kind of discombobulation and wonder because it is so outside of my own upbringing. And also for, you know, a really strong story and compelling characters and emotional wrenching and exciting battles. You know, the same thing I would look for in epic fantasy or anything else that I am drawn to.
I like how on Bones, the artist lady can reconstruct your facial features using an iPad and a misting hologram thing. And it only takes like 30 seconds.
Yeah, wouldn't archaeologists love that, man? If that were so real, cool. It'd be so cool.
Yeah, and then you read a story about how an archaeologist, you know, they discovered these bones and they did this reconstruction thing, and for the first time ever, we're seeing the face of someone who lived, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, and it only took them 27 months to create this. Exactly. This. And you're going, well, why didn't they just use the thing on bones?
Right, and the statistical accuracy is something like 20% or something, yeah. Right?
But among my friends group,
Django.
Since we're all programmers, it's any movie that involves hacking.
Yes,
we'll have this problem because it's like, oh my god, why do you think it works this way? It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I was actually the system sysadmin on a Unix system when Jurassic Park came out. And yes. I just remember, you know, the little girl going, oh, this is Unix. Mouse, click, mouse, click. And you're going, no! What are you doing? So, Django, since you interjected, why don't you tell us what makes up a good story for you? What are you looking for?
So, my background is also not military, although I guess I approach it from a more academic standpoint. You know, I haven't served, obviously. I have studied the military of the past a fair bit. And so the biggest element for me, aside from the usual elements, as Gail was mentioning, of just any good story, that it needs to have good characters and a plot and people that I care about, and, you know, when we're talking about the specifically military aspect, the thing I mostly look for is that it's not, I guess the word I'm going to use is stupid, but in a particular way, there is a tendency of sci-fi militaries to just kind of blindly transpose stuff from either the present day or sometime in the past to the future with wildly different weapons and technology. And that is probably my biggest turnoff, particularly in books. In movies, I can kind of forgive it. But like you know, I can kind of go with it when in Star Wars the spaceships bank like World War II fighters because people feel like they ought to, even though it makes no sense. But like in written science fiction, I feel like, you know, the thing that draws me is when the author has really put a lot of thought into the technologies available to his characters and how they would sort of intelligently use them and what kind of a battlefield that would look like, rather than just saying, oh, it's just like World War II except with laser guns.
Okay. Interesting. Now, along those same lines, Jeff, I know that you came out and said that you were not a huge fan of the Paul Verhoeven Starship Troopers, but you did feel that the third direct-to-DVD sequel was very realistic.
I didn't say it was realistic. I said it was enjoyable. So I do like the CGI Starship Troopers sequels.
No, I'm talking about the one where they brought back the guy from the first one.
Oh, Vander, the live action one.
Yeah,
no,
Vander, whatever his name was. You know, he made the first movie, and then his career tanked completely, and he didn't do anything else until they called him and said, "Hey, we'll give you, you know, free meals if you'll come do another movie with us."
No, that one I did not see.
Hold on, I got something for Django.
I was.
Oh, God.
Yes, because you can hear that in space, right?
Yes, exactly. So
I was actually going to cite Starship Troopers as a bad example, because, like, you look, you know, they land on Klyndathu, and the human troops all go running out because apparently they need to engage the monsters at, like, maybe 20 or 30 feet away with their rifles. And it's like, why are you doing this, right? Like, it's that kind of thing where people are being, in the light of the, you know, whatever resources they have available, are being obviously dumb. Because in real life, people rarely are.
Well, according to Fred, that's just inventory.
Well, no, see, and this is where a lot of military sci-fi fails. And Starship Troopers is a fantastic example of just that. Not every conflict is the Battle of fucking Normandy.
Yes.
Right? You are not going to land 1,000 human bodies into a battle and just throw them into machine gun fire unless there is absolutely no other way that you can deal with the objective or the conflict that you're faced with. So when Starship Troopers did that, it was like, yeah, they don't have any sharpshooters. They have no long-distance weapons. None of these people were trained to aim. It's just barrage of fire, volume of fire, go! No!
So Jeff, you didn't actually get to answer the question yet, but I did want to throw out there. One of the aspects of Babylon 5 that I thought was very cool, kind of going along what Aaron's saying, is that there was a point where basically, I think it was the Centauri, just they went to the Narn homeworld and they sat in orbit and dropped rocks.
Yep. Mass drivers.
Yeah, that's all they had to do.
Yep.
Anyway, Jeff.
That was a very wise choice. Well, I did not serve. However, I had two semi-regular gigs doing video production for both the Army and the Air Force. With the Air Force, it was actually on a base. So I have a bit of experience with being the unitasker civilian who has to be basically in close contact with the military types for long periods of time. And you can run hot and cold with that. So I personally have always found myself drawn to stories that involve both military and non-military personnel in some kind of a situation. Or I like the stories where the military finds itself in a distinctly non-military situation and finds itself not prepped for it.
Right, Gail.
For me, Battlestar Galactica was one of those, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I really liked the conflict that was the immediate setup, which was how is a military ship in a military situation going to cope with all of these civilians? And for me,
not
that
just
makes
that,
her,
but they have to keep the human population alive and for it to grow and all that, yeah.
And yeah, I think you know, you can argue until the cows come home about the way that show went, but I think the first season in particular really kind of tackled that question a lot, and that was part of the excitement and the interest for me.
And I assume you're talking about the reboot.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. The new one.
And not the reboot, which isn't out yet.
Yeah, they're gonna make the movies now again. Yay. Or are you talking about the comic books that are the Hatch comic books that are out?
No. I mean, the movies are not going to be the movies of the TV show. They're going to be new, different movies.
Yeah.
I thought you was talking about Battlestar 1980.
Here's what I want to know. How are they getting J.J. Abrams to do all these different projects?
He's three people. Didn't you know that? He's cloned.
Well, he's secretly Brandon Sanderson.
I mean, can't they task? couldn't they task Mo Tancheron and Jed Whedon to do a couple of these? I mean, come on.
That'd be nice.
Anyway, so Jeff, who are some of your favorite like books and authors? I mean, when you're talking about this with your friends at the bar and you're just sitting there and you're going, ah, screw football, let's talk about military sci-fi. What do you suggest people read? What do you like?
My two that leapt to mind on this subject, especially when I talked about military and non-military situations. I really like the military structure and the behavior of the officers in Moten God's Eye. I enjoy watching it. I don't like their behavior, but I enjoy watching their behavior as they try to deal with the first contact situation.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, a book that I really liked was Dan Abnett's Embedded, came out a few years ago, which is about a reporter who gets installed in a chip in a soldier's head, and the soldier gets killed, and now he's in charge of the soldier's body while they're on this alien planet, and he discovers that the military is up to no good, as always happens in these types of stories. So he's kind of, he has to pretend that he's actually a military guy while he's decked out with all these futuristic weapons and stuff like that.
Okay.
But he has to basically, learn how to be a hyper soldier on this alien world just by having what he had observed while he was installed in the guy's head. So,
very cool. Gail, what about you?
I wish I'd had a little bit more time to prepare, because I would have sourced a couple of short stories that I really think are great examples.
My fault.
No, it's okay. But I mean, who knows if I would have bothered. I'm in a unique position wherein I also have several other requirements from all books I read, and one of them is a strong female main character. Mm-hmm. And so one of my first kind of like introductions to military sci-fi, and one of the books that made me love it and start to seek it out as a genre, is Tanya Huff's Valor series.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Tanya served, and so I think that that colors her accuracy, or at least I hope it does. Again, I can't speak to that in particular, but she also does base some of her battles off of historical stuff. The first book has some of the Zulu Wars in it, and I actually really like that. Being really into history and stuff like that, I like watching her take her military expertise, her amazing imagination, and sort of writing skills, and apply that to kind of battlefields in space or on planets. So, and I also really love her main character. And I think Tanya is one of the sort of great writers of our time, in that everything she writes has a completely different voice. So I always urge people, if you've read her in like a fantasy setting or an urban fantasy setting, and you didn't like her, or you weren't attracted to those characters, that you try her voice in military sci-fi, because it's completely different. She has this almost like Judith Tarr approach to the text, where it's very sparse and sharp and very dialogue driven. And I really respect her writing style. And so that's another reason I love those particular books. So they're all books that have the word valor in the title.
Very cool.
Sounds great.
Fred, what was the series that you had recommended to me like 2.5 years ago or something? It's written by a woman. Was it Elizabeth Moon?
Probably.
Okay. Do you know that?
That was going to be one of the ones I was going to talk about.
Okay. Well, then tell us.
Well, you should look at Elizabeth Moon. Now, she has a couple of clusters of books set in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of them is the... has things like Trading in Danger, names like that.
Oh my God, yeah, I loved those books. You're totally
and
right.
Then there's the ones that came out in the 80s. So it's kind of like, I can't remember the relationship between the two sets of characters, whether they're related, aunt and niece or what. But
isn't the first one Sassenach? Or isn't Sassenach in there?
Sassenach is part of the Planet Pirates trilogy that Anne McCaffrey...
But Moon crossed over into that with her, didn't she?
Well,
I'm on crack.
Anne McCaffrey wrote 3 books, co-authored with folks. Planet Pirates, Sassenach, and I forget the 3rd one. That was a long time ago. I can't remember whether that's part of Moon's own series. But Moon wrote a series in which you have a lot of large families running the universe, and there's rejuvenation. Like the first series is about a cashiered captain who ends up basically being the captain of a private yacht and the trouble that they get into. And then the second main series is the one that involves things like Trading in Danger, and that's a serving officer. There's probably, 6 or 8 books at this point.
Wow.
And Elizabeth Moon was a Marine officer, so she gets it right. She's one of the folks that gets it right.
The first book of the first series is called Hunting Party.
No, that's in the middle somewhere.
Not according to Goodreads.
Really?
And yeah. Goodreads has never lied to us.
Goodreads can be wrong, obviously.
I'm with you, though. I loved those books. I remember the one with the young, like, lieutenant, I think she is, and she kind of has to make her way up through the ranks. And
right.
there are conspiracies and things like that, but they're really good officer perspective stuff. Sasanak is Elizabeth Moon and Anne McCaffrey. I just looked it up.
Very cool. What else you got,
No, Fred? Those are great books.
What else have I got? Well, speaking of another woman, C.J. Cherry, I am right now rereading Down Below Station, which won the Hugo award and has, I think, was Jeff mentioned something about liking stories with the civilian as well as the military.
Yeah.
You've got the setting is Pell Station in her Alliance Union universe. Pell Station is one of the few planets that can be lived on by humans, even though they need breathing gear, and has an alien race, so they can get resources from there, and it becomes the battleground between the two major political factions, the Alliance and the Union, the Alliance being Earth and Union being all the colonies that left Earth. So you've got strong military characters, especially one female captain. You've got conniving politicians, you've got idealistic politicians, you've got the aliens, and you've got a lot of civilians that are just caught in the middle. So that's a really good story, and I'm really enjoying my reread. Ian Banks, of course, wrote his culture series, and a lot of them involve the military, either large forces or spies. So take a look at any of those titles.
Are you having a party, Fred?
No, that's me.
that's my family out there with the wine.
My house. Patrick, you just did an interview with Joe Haldeman.
I did, yes.
And he answered my question.
Yes.
And you may recall that one of the titles I asked in my question was a book called All My Sins Remembered, which I think is, along with David Drake's Redliners, is one of the good stories that kind of portrays a broken soldier, broken military. Somebody with what we now call PTSD.
Well, and you mentioned Haldeman, and Gail, you mentioned Huff, and they actually have two of DiNardo's favorite books. Huff wrote Confederation of Bagels, and Haldeman wrote The Forever Bagel. So those are two of his absolute favorites that I know of. So
that's true. Can never forget the bagels.
More?
Yeah, well, look, I told you I trimmed it down, and you know how long they usually are. Now, come on, I can't not mention my two favorites.
Okay.
First off, David Drake, either the Hammer Slammer series or the Daniel Leary series. The Leary series is based off of Patrick O'Brien's famous sea stories, which you may have seen in the movie Master and Commander. So that's kind of more sedate, slow. Hammer Slammers is, of course, a favorite of mine because I was a tanker and it's all about a tank company. And Drake served in a tank unit in the Vietnam War. So he knows the reality of war, and he puts it in these books. My favorite is one called Paying the Piper, which I just reread earlier this year. And last but not least, I will jump over to fantasy with Glenn Cook. And he's got many, many series, but the one that I've liked the most for the military viewpoint is the one called The Black Company. And, Gail, you might like this because there is a strong female character in it that these guys, this mercenary unit, starts off working for one faction. And basically the powers behind the factions are the gods or the super wizards of the world. And they're fighting against a wizard called the Lady, and they eventually end up working for the Lady. So it's, I think it's like maybe 8 books at this point, and I don't think he's writing anymore, but Tor came out with, I think, maybe 3 or 4 omnibuses with like 2 to 3 titles per omnibus. Yeah. And he really puts people say that George R. R. Martin put the grit into fantasy. I mean, Glenn Cook was putting the grit into fantasy way before Martin was writing a lot of the fantasy. So
true fact.
Yep.
Okay. So
those are my recommendations.
Very cool. And Fred, I'm going to recommend that you go out and you check out, it's from 1984, Paramount Pictures, Best Defense, Dudley Moore and Eddie Murphy.
Oh, God. Now I remember that movie.
Now you remember it.
Now I know why I never saw it, because I was
You were busy.
I was doing it for real.
Well, here's what's interesting about the film. It actually, Eddie Murphy is a tank guy, and he is in the tank and when Iraq invades Kuwait.
Yeah.
But this was in 84.
Yeah.
Kind of like a little bit of foreshadowing there.
Now,
okay.
Now, do you remember, the picture of George Dumagian?
No.
In the tank?
No. Anyway. So,
I would rather recommend Stripes because that actually was filmed at Fort Knox. So we all got a laugh at seeing all the sights that we would have to go through ourselves.
Django, what about you?
Let's see. Some of mine have been taken.
That's the way this works.
So I'll think of some new ones.
Or talk about what's been taken. Just give a different spin.
Yeah, I know. Let's see. I can't go too far without mentioning David Weber. You know, his Honor Harrington series was kind of formative for me in terms of military sci-fi, although it's a series that I think has a lot of problems, particularly later. He has the standard problem with a heroine who just does better and better in each book is that you kind of run out of things for her to do because she's all incredibly awesome at everything. What I like about it is that he wanted to produce essentially the Napoleonic Wars in space with ships in terms of his combat. And he, you know, being the science fiction author, he jiggered the laws of his universe so that they produced the result he wanted, just the way the technology works and the way the ships work and so on. So it's good for that, although not the best series in other aspects.
Well, and see, I find it interesting that the panelist who actually went to a convention all about that wasn't the one who brought that up.
Because I knew that Django would be bringing it up. So
fair enough.
What do you think about what he just said, though, Fred?
No, I mean, that is a valid criticism. And what Weber has done to get around that is he split it into several sub-series at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Saginami Island series, which starts off with a group of cadets. You've got the Stephanie Harrington, which is like a prehistory. You've got Timothy Zahn is actually writing another prehistory series. And he does concentrate on different characters.
I kind of trailed off after book 6 or 7, so I can't really speak to that. But it definitely has some aspects that I really like. I like Peter Hamilton's books. I like the Void trilogy and Pandora's Star and its sequel. Are both really good. Yeah, and his most recent book, Great North Road, also is not really a military book. It's more of a police procedural, but it does actually have some good military bits in it. And he's very good about sort of thinking through the implications of his technologies. Mm-hmm. And
you know something else.
Go ahead.
Yeah, something else about Hamilton, because the military is a big presence in Night's Dawn as well, and in Fallen Dragon before that. He recognizes that anytime you're going to have something that's big that's threatening the galaxy, the military is going to get involved, but that they're only going to be one real factor in it. Plus, he just has this such a great love of futuristic military hardware. He can't help but put it in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he loves it. So those are good. I like that a lot. I had one other, but now it has escaped me. I like David Drake. I don't have much to add to what Fred said. I like Glenn Cook. If we can include fantasy militaries, there's more. Depending on how you count it, the Island in the Sea of Time books by S.M. Sterling, and also a lesser-known series of his called The General that I think starts with, like, The Forge is the first book. It's 5 shortish novels that take place on a fallen colony of a galactic empire, and he basically recreates the campaigns of Belisarius, which is quite good.
You mean the guy who created Quantum Leap?
No, that's not a reference I even understand.
Belisarius. He created Quantum Leap, NCIS, bunch of shows.
That was Belisario.
Oh, Belisario. Oh. Okay.
See, I would have had to know that.
He was actually in the military with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Just a fountain of knowledge tonight, Patrick.
So, Django, I'm kind of shocked that you didn't pull up Brian Smith's Voltron Force, Volume 1, Shelter from the Source.
Is that really military, though? I think Voltron is a civilian organization.
No, he should have brought up Robotech.
Now, here's what I'm curious about, Django. Has the Voltron reboot made it into your anime column yet?
No.
Will it ever?
I'm ignoring it.
I think everybody is.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's actually interesting. There's a lot of anime that involves
military
stuff, but they're almost always the bad guys or incompetent. Mm-hmm. That they have a huge distrust of the military in most of that world. And that there's always, like, even when the military is the good guys, the main characters are always like this small group of civilians, and the military guys are at best well-meaning but incompetent. It's an interesting sort of cultural lens to look through.
Mm. All righty, Aaron.
Okay, yeah, I got. I may be a bit of an anomaly in that I mostly read shorts when it comes to military sci-fi. I haven't really gotten into any novels or series yet, but I'm hearing lots of good ones. The Tanya Huff's Valor series sounds really cool. The first one I want to talk about is a short in the fantasy and science fiction issue March-April of 2012. It's called Electrica by Sean McMullen. It takes place during the Napoleonic Wars, and Gail, you may be interested in it for the historical aspects of it. It is kind of a guy's story. Most of the characters are men. They're doing guy's things, but it's fascinating for the historical accuracy, I thought. I mean, I'm not steeped in the Napoleonic Wars and the history around them, but I know enough about them that when I read the story, I felt like, yes, I'm seeing characters that believably came from that time. It had all of those elements that we talked about when we got started. You know, what do you look for in a good story? It had characters that I could believe in, that I could care about, and the military aspects of it weren't so anachronistic or so completely outside what I would expect that it put me off.
I have a question. What are guys' things?
Yeah. How do I phrase that? Pretty much every character in the story is a man. There are issues of male dominance in households, in politics, rivalries among comrades in the military, rivalries for a woman's hand or her passions. It's all centered around those very male-centric patriarchal issues. The only female character that actually appears in the story doesn't really get much say.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
It's that type of story.
Okay.
And I only remark on that because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, stories with female characters leading them. This is not one of those.
Sure.
The other books that I'm reading from, though, one of them is called Substitution Cipher. And we were talking about espionage earlier. And this is all about alternate history stories surrounding major events like the landing of Columbus. And what if there was some espionage that went on there at that landing that changed history?
You're saying there's not? Because there was an episode of Ancient Aliens on the History Channel.
Yeah. It's better than that. I'm gonna propose that it's better than that.
Okay. Because Ancient Alien theorists, you know, pilot theorists have said that there was weird stuff going on there. So
there certainly was. Yeah, I know. And with Hitler, too. You know, really, it's all aliens when you get down to it. But no, this one is called So the Taino Call It, T-A-I-N-O. It's by M. Fenn, and it's the first story in this book is about that landing. And the people that are on these islands have sort of a core that engage in espionage against Columbus. And it's fascinating. It's beautifully written. A young female character here engaged in just learning. She's just part of her society. She's just learning. And she gets fascinated by this one figure from history who came with Columbus and ended up aiding the natives on these islands, the people who lived there, in repelling them. It's a beautifully written story. The prose is just completely absorbing. There's no way to get away from the story. And then the other ones, you had Jane Gates on last week or the week before.
Yep, a couple times.
Talking about wartime stories. Mm-hmm. Or war stories, and I'm so looking forward to that. I pledged the hell out of that Kickstarter, and I cannot wait to get that book in my hands.
Well, I believe it's getting published by Apex, so that should be very soon.
Yeah, it's coming out soon. They're looking at May and June, I think they said, sometime real quick. That one and another one of James that she did with Erica Holt, Broken Time Blues,
mm-hmm.
That one in particular focuses on the 1920s, during the Broken Time.
Yes.
A lot of the characters are all World War I veterans. And their stories just take me away. I cannot put these kinds of stories down. I love reading about someone who's been there and come back and what they're doing now. Those are the military stories that I really go for. So with war stories, I know they're kind of breaking it apart. They're doing pre-conflict, in the thick of it, and then the aftermath. The aftermath stories I know are just going to get me right in the heart and grab me. And I'm afraid of them, and I'm looking forward to them just because I can't get enough of that kind of storytelling.
Very cool. Well, we're running a little bit out of time, so I want to quickly get you guys to answer another couple questions here. So, Aaron, what would you like to see more of from the genre, and what would you like to see less of?
Oh, okay. Less of the kind of crap that Starship Troopers did. less of that everything's a battle of Normandy nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But much more of the aftermath stuff. Much more of what happens when a soldier comes back, and where do they go? What do they do? How do they integrate? How do they not integrate? What struggles do they face? We are just at the beginning of the era of society saying, yeah, PTSD is a real thing, and we need to do something about it. And the more stories we have that talk about that, I think the closer we're going to get to actually having an answer or something approximating an answer. Whereas right now, we're still watching how many thousands of men and women killed themselves last year, veterans? That needs to stop. And we as society need to be part of making it stop. So,
all right, Django, what about you?
I would like to see more varied settings. What I always like to see in this genre is someone who has come up with a plausible science fictional technology and then put some thought into the implications and what this would be used for, and so that we're not just sort of recreating the present day or some particular situation, but that, real kind of, second and third order effects, what effect does your sci-fi innovation have on the people who are charged with using it? That kind of thing. That would be my big ask. That's what I love to read.
Okay. Jeff.
I'd like to see more military like the old G.I. Joe cartoon where every soldier picks his own uniform. I really want more of that.
That'd be awesome.
In reality, Joe though, there was a great piece I heard on the radio a few months ago interviewing a guy who was a drone pilot out of California talking about how he basically drives 6 miles to work, sits in an air-conditioned cockpit, flies a drone on the other side of the world, kills people, then goes home and takes his wife to Outback Steakhouse. As we see more and more of that type of technology coming in, I think the actual paradigm of what it means to be an active militant is gonna change, and especially with all this crap heating up with Russia. Lord knows what we're going to end up seeing, but the whole idea of a remote controlled military and the impact that might have on people, especially if there's a conflict with a high body count or a significant fallout, socially for a country or a population, I think that would be somewhat interesting.
Alrighty, Gail.
What would I like to see more of?
Yes.
I really love kind of the fish out of water cultural trope, like conflicting cultures. And so most of the military sci-fi that I've read extrapolates the military regime from the American military. So I would love to see someone kind of in the future who is in, you can keep that extrapolation, but then has to like do a military exchange program where they have to learn to and be a part of a different military setup, and say an alien culture. I think that would be a really interesting journey to watch. You know, so we're very kind of accustomed to how we perceive officers and you know, servicemen, and I'd love to see how aliens would, you know, an alien invention of that. So like, I'm already interested in the culture of being in the military. So I'd love to see that kind of aspect explored a little bit more.
And what would you like to see less of?
Oh, I don't know. You know, the kind of standard old boys network thing. I mean, I agree with, you know, previous comments on Elizabeth Moon's stuff. I really love it. And a lot of military sci-fi like hers really deals with officers. And I'm kind of tired of that. I'd like to see more with kind of the grunts and the underlings, as it were. One of the reasons I like Tanya Huffs is her main character is a staff sergeant and not really an officer. So I like that as well. So I guess I'd like to see less of, you know, the military from an officer's perspective.
Okay, gotcha. Now, Fred.
Yes, sir.
I have a note here from John Stevens who says that you confided in him that in 1995 you stood in line for 12 hours to be one of the first people to see Tank Girl. Would you like to confirm that right now for us?
I have never seen that movie. Not even on cable.
Oh, God.
What would you like to see more of in military sci-fi, and what would you like to see less of, Fred?
More tanks.
More tanks.
Less crazy veterans.
That's crazy. Okay. That's pretty straightforward.
There you go.
I agree with that, though.
All righty. So I am going to put it out there to our listeners. I want to know what makes up a good story for you. What are some of your favorite books and authors? And what would you like to see more of for military sci-fi and less of? Anybody have any final thoughts before I go ahead and let you go? Okay, so I had two ums. Let's start with Django.
I should mention that we have a fantasy military anthology John Joseph Adams is doing called Operation Arcana that comes out next year that I get to be a part of. So I'm really excited about that.
Very cool. And Gail, you get the final word.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. I'm going to end with more books. One of the ones that I didn't really get to is an interesting take on a military sci-fi, which is kind of a post-apocalyptic military sci-fi by Sherry Tepper, and it's called Gate to Women's Country. It is from a civilian perspective, but I think, and it draws a lot on history, but I think the way it tackles the civilian versus military integration we talked about earlier is very fascinating. So Gate to Women's Country. And then I have been totally addicted to There Is Not to Reason Why series by Gene Johnson, which is like a far future military sci-fi, but the main character has the psychic abilities to see the way the war is going. And it's a little magic wooey, but I'm just totally addicted to the series. I don't know what it is about it that makes me love it so much. So I'm super. The next one is coming out in July, and I'm stocking it on Amazon. I can't wait for that one.
You have and to I'm, say that again. Magic wooey.
Magic wooey. And then I am about to pick up Fortune's Pawn, which is a new military series by Rachel Bach. So I thought I would just give that one a shout out because we talked a lot about books, older books. And so those are a couple of newer series that are launching right now. So I don't know what it's like, but I'm looking forward to it. So.
Alrighty. Well, I think this is all great. I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. Don't forget also Bujold's masterpiece, which is called Shards of Bagels. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal Irregulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Magic Wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.